Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
G'day and welcome to The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Thursday, the 9th of May. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great to have you with us here at AusBiz, our two experts on the show for today. Daniel Otsisi from Stock Doctor and Mark Garner from MPC Markets. Welcome to both of you.
Good afternoon, sir.
Mark, we're just talking before you came on about what has developed into a bit of a mini reporting season out of the Macquarie Conference. We're getting a lot of updates at the moment.
Yeah.
And the theme seems to be a confirmation of guidance, not upgrades.
Yeah.
Confirmation that we're sort of on track.
I think yesterday there was four out of the five basically confirmed guidance. Pro Medicus was super bullish. It was probably one of the most positive updates I've seen in terms of the wording and things. So, and yeah, but obviously today the retailers, which is probably, a fair bit softer today, which leads into obviously our stock of the day. But yeah, it is certainly getting more and more important over time. It's very, very closely watched.
Yeah, to your point, Baby Bunting downgrading profit guidance, warned consumers are being hit by those rising cost of living, which we know. Super Retail posting flat sales growth there for the 9 months, the end of March. And we're going to talk about JB in just a moment. But Daniel, what are your observations about what you've heard?
Yeah, look, Andrew, we had a chat the other day about a lot of the cyclical companies now showing reduced demand and concerns in earnings as well. So, like Mark said, it has been a bit of a mixed bag. There have been, I would say, a few of the quality companies showing kind of strength. But overall, reaffirming guidance and not changing view has been the overall kind of response, I'd say, corporates have been giving since the Macquarie Conference. So still a lot of work to do to understand what the forward earnings expectations are. And I don't think it's an easy market at the moment for investors. I think there's still a lot of confusion about how earnings will look, how demand will look, especially in a higher interest rate for longer. So more question marks than answers this kind of Macquarie conference season.
All right. Well, perhaps we can clarify a bit of that today. Get some answers from you guys. Give us some greater idea how to navigate these challenging circumstances. The first five stocks we're going to take a look at: Domino's Pizza, Fortescue, Hillgrove Resources, MMA Offshore, and Monadelphous. Our stock of the day, what is the retailer JB Hi-Fi? It's out with a sales update in line with its own expectations in what it's calling a challenging and competitive retail market. Quarterly comparable sales down 0.3% in Australia, up 2.9% in New Zealand, interestingly enough, with Good Guys sales down 0.8%. Over the year to date, sales up 0.5% on a total basis at its business in Australia. And we can see it has come off today as a result, almost 4%. And I mentioned those other retailers at the same time, given the challenge they're facing. So Daniel, what's your view then on what you've heard from JB Hi-Fi?
Yeah, look, Andrew, not too surprised from JB Hi-Fi. And I think overall, it probably has been taking industry market share from the likes of your Harvey Normans and smaller kind of electrical goods players, because they have been showing resilience in their main brand. Obviously, the Good Guys is a little bit different in the larger white label goods, or white goods, sorry. So I don't think the weakness there was too unexpected, that the 8% like-for-like decline, that's consistent with what it's been showing. But when I think about JB Hi-Fi, and we spoke about this not too long ago on the call, what I'm really concerned about is the structure, I guess, of their cost base, and particularly what we're seeing around rents, because lease expenses have been lower as a percentage, obviously, since COVID. And we know JB has bargaining power, but I see that as a threat to their business going forward. Centre Group and Vicinity are showing, a bit more of a clawback in what they're showing in rental power versus their lessees. So that's just one thing I'm concerned about. It's got higher than long-term average margins right now, and that's why I wouldn't want to be in the stock. And obviously a top-line slowdown would be an exacerbation for that. So still after today's update, I'm bearish. I was bearish last time we spoke, and I think the recent strength was really on a reversal of short positions after that report where, you know, there was an earnings decline, but not by as much as some analysts were expecting. So I still think the stock's probably a little bit overvalued for my liking. I'd prefer not to be in it right now, but as we all know, they're very strong business, great quality business, but just at the wrong price for me.
Any other retailers you'd be in at the moment?
Look, I think the outlook for retail is getting worse and worse, clearly, as we go forward. The one for me, which just understanding the long-term growth perspective and the long-term growth outlook, has been Lovisa, and that's been the one I've been consistent with, Andrew. Is the one where we went through the retail Armageddon in October last year, where the stocks are getting sold down heavily. That was my key pick, and I'd say even though the expectations are great, you know, they actually have the pipeline to deliver that over the long term. So that's the one I'm actually most comfortable with, which I would say not many people are at the moment.
All right, so would you be selling JB?
Yeah, I'm happy to call it a sell right now on outlook risks.
Yep. Okay. Mark.
Yep, I agree. Sell, absolutely. Not because it's not a great company, but consumer discretionary is run really hard. I think we're probably going to see some short-term, medium-term weakness in those. We've also had a few of the banks report today, today, and CBA and Judo and things. And yep. And look, their loan books and their loans in arrears really starting to edge up a fair bit higher as well. So I think that's sort of really showing that, higher for long is really starting to bite the consumer, and that disposable income is probably really finally run out in a way. So I think for this one, you've had a fantastic run. It's very high on the list of companies you'd be buying back on any weakness. And I tend to agree as well, Lovisa. We've trimmed some Lovisa just on a sector outlook, probably only about 20%. But we'll be just running a stock specific risk management plan for the rest of that position. But the I think broadly there is a whole load of downside in these consumer discretionary stocks. And I think when the market rallied 1.5% the other day on the hope of rate cuts, people are actually going to realise that rate cuts, like the catalyst for rate cuts, is not necessarily a good thing. It's usually softening economy, softening demand. So, yeah. As I said, you've had a great win. Why wouldn't you just at least take half off at absolute minimum, if not just sell the lot?
All right, that is a double sell then for JB Hi-Fi. So let's get into the stocks as picked by you. And look, we can continue what Mark has been talking about there, I guess, essentially, particularly that rundown in disposable income and how it's going to affect a stock like Domino's. It is our first stock picked by Edwin there. First quarter were US results there. And in fact, international came in better than expected with an increase in EBITDA, particularly to franchisees. But it continues to struggle in Europe. And of course, we have seen what happened at the beginning of the year to the stock. The question is, can it come back from here? Mark?
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan, particularly, this is obviously retailers in a way as well. We might see a bit of return to it because obviously it's low cost, but they don't really control their input prices. And that's obviously a real problem. And we're not really big fans of businesses that can't really control their margins strongly. There is a lot going on in Domino's. I think the viewer asked, was the investment committee wrong to take it out of the portfolio? I don't think they were. I think at this stage, they've got growth going on in Malaysia, Singapore, Cambodia. They're going to the US and Danish market. At this point in time, when a stock's kind of on the nose, and obviously you can see that in the chart there, they tend to take the bad news. It can be a sea of good news, and then it'll just be one of their expansions, geographical expansions, that'll be the bad news that sort of stops it heading higher. So I would like to see, you know, at least sort of more, you know, 6 to 12 months more of this. I wouldn't really be considering it. If I'm selling JB Hi-Fi, I'm certainly not buying Domino's Pizza, that's for sure. JB Hi-Fi is, in my opinion, much higher quality business, as is Lovisa. So this is pretty far down on the list for me in terms of, you know, in terms of buying in that sector.
If you're in it though, do you hold it or sell it?
Sell it.
Sell it.
Yeah.
All right.
I think you'll have better options elsewhere.
Yeah.
And as you can see today, you've got, you know, I think Baby Bunting's down 20%.
Yeah.
There's a few at Super Retail's down 5%. Bapcor fell 20% the other day. Like the options are increasing across the board, and I believe that at this point in time, a lot of those businesses are, you know, a lot simpler and probably a little bit better quality at better prices.
Yeah, we're clearly at that point now where the market is serving harsh judgment if you miss. Okay, so Daniel, what are your thoughts then on Domino's?
Oh, it's going to be a gloomy episode, Andrew. I'll open it up. This has been a consistent sell for me as well every time it's brought up on the call. And I think the questioning from the investors has always been, it's fallen a long way. Is it, you know, an oversold opportunity? But I think that's a bit of a misnomer. It's very difficult. And there is a narrative quite often with these businesses, which, you know, perhaps have been really good quality in the past or have, you know, done really well for a specific reason. When they get crunch, it's always viewed as an opportunity. But I would say, understand the earnings outlook and what are the drivers of earnings. And, you know, last time we spoke about this stock, my view was that, you know, the consensus outlook for same store sales, for store growth and for revenue growth just looked way too optimistic. And that was partly driven by the guidance that the company was given. And since then, you know, almost every update has been a disappointment to that guidance, mainly driven by what's happened in Asia. And we know that in Asia, particularly Japan, you know, they just had a one in a lifetime free kick during COVID where, you know, it was one of the very few places open that they could get deliveries. They already had an existing delivery network. And obviously, because it was a low cost option, people were ordering it very frequently. And I think that just gave a lot of false confidence in investors and in the company as well to invest even more in that region, double the amount of stores in Asia since pre-COVID, and it just hasn't worked out well. So in my opinion, I still think consensus numbers still look too optimistic. And I had a look back today, actually, you know, what the revisions have been just for this year. And, you know, earnings have been revised down 60% over like the last 6-7 months. So I don't think that trend is over. And until that trend is over and we start to see a stabilization or even the first upgrade, I just wouldn't want to be in this stock. And unfortunately, the fact is they still have a lot of net debt on the balance sheet, which is a precarious position. So no, unfortunately, I don't think this is an oversold, you know, good quality opportunity. I think there's risks here.
All right, okay. And once again, a double sell then. Well, let's move out of consumer discretionary, get into resources with Fortescue. This one picked by Patrick. Obviously, in the big play being iron ore. March quarter results, just a miss there, but it did need to break some records to surpass previous results. It wasn't helped by a train derailment and also some adverse weather conditions as well, though it generally seemed to be keeping costs in control at the moment. Daniel, give us your view.
Oh, it's not good for the momentum here. I'm going to open up with another sell, Andrew, and another one where I've consistently been a sell on Fortescue. I just think far too many factors are in its favor right now in terms of, you know, its earnings. It's got, you know, obviously iron ore prices at still very elevated levels, which have been there for a while. And you know, the Fortescue, to their credit, have been one of the best operationally speaking, like in terms of execution. The only thing that hasn't gone their way is mismanagement of the Iron Bridge project. But when you look at, like you said, cost escalation, I think they've, you know, outperformed Rio and BHP in WA. But, you know, obviously they don't have the diversification. They're spending billions of dollars in the hydrogen and say green ammonia environment where, funnily enough, when there was a downgrade to the CapEx spend, the market responded positively. So it shows what I think the market actually wants from Fortescue, you know, stop going down this avenue where the returns are unclear and deliver the record dividends whilst iron ore prices are still high. And the other thing that it has going for it is that obviously steel margin profitability for the steel mills has been low. So they've been favoring low grade ore as a method of cost saving. Their realizations have been well above, you know, what their averages are. So they're just over earning on a lot of fronts. I think that's driven way too much momentum in the name. And, you know, it might be trading at an optically cheap PE, but we know things change very quickly for resource stocks. So I don't like the fact that it's not diversified, and I don't like the fact that it's over-earning on so many fronts. So I'm happy to call it a sell. I think there's probably an acquisition coming for Fortescue. They would be known to be underbidding in certain projects. One of them was the IGO Tianqi acquisition in lithium a few years ago. So I think they're keen to do something here, Andrew, to diversify themselves while the share price is high. And I don't want to be caught in it for that reason as well.
Yeah, well, certainly Andrew Forrest is making that noise, isn't he? Trying to get some diversity in the company. But Daniel, essentially, you seem to be in line with the brokers. From what I can see, all very negative on the stock. Mark, do you agree?
Yeah, Fortescue and CBA are the top two stocks to never listen to the analysts, because they're just nearly always wrong. So I think just always add 10% to in those two particular stocks. They always seem to really hate on them. But in an effort to be slightly positive, because this is a sell for me as well, I would say sell it to buy BHP to get that diversification. It's a good business. It's obviously, you know, they're very good. You dig it out low cost, ship it low cost. They're reliable. And I think, look, the management turnover, the board's had massive amounts of turnover. I think Andrew Forrest is, well, the board has gone and then effectively overcomplicated what people loved about the business. Was it was simple, it paid great dividends, and it just kept on churning them out year after year. So I don't really have any problem with them going into diversifying, like in the mining sector. They are doing a couple of really good things in terms of they've got electric excavators now. They are trying to green. That'll be overall $100 million in cost savings over time. But to Daniel's point, profits of the steel companies in China have fallen like 50% in the last sort of half year or so. And they reduced steel production by about 2% in the first quarter of this year. And I think, we've got a PE of around about the 10 mark, and Fortescue generally trades somewhere in a range of 4 to 12. So it's on the expensive side. Dividends been paid out. Overall, I would much prefer, you've got BHP at the bottom of the range. I think copper's about to explode. They're sitting on the biggest uranium deposit in the world. That potash project will come up in the next year or so, and they're not as tied to iron ore. Well, they won't be as tied to iron ore in the future going forward. So, yep. And it's at a cheaper price. So, yeah, a switch. But yeah, definitely sell Fortescue if you've got it.
All right, a sell, but you found as a buy at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. Certainly have begun negatively. So, Mark, you talk about copper about to explode. Well, let's get into a copper stock then. This one is Hillgrove Resources, picked by Jess. It is focused on the development of its Kanmantoo underground copper mine in South Australia, and completed in April, production increased to 719 tons, that's up from 589 tons, so it's looking to ramp up production at the moment. We often talk about the fact that there are very few copper plays out there, so what do you make of this stock then?
We own this stock, actually. Ah. It was hard to find because it's classified as a diversified miner when, in fact, it's just a copper miner. So it misses a lot of the screeners. We were looking for pure play copper, pure copper play. Strangely enough, the Sydney Resources Roundup conference is going on at the moment. So I spoke to the CEO yesterday, just coincidentally, when I went down. So, I mean, realistically, these guys will produce for around about $8,000 and then they're selling at $15,000. So they started production in February. They're ramping up to about $1,000 to $1,200 over the next few months. In speaking to the CEO, super practical, Lachlan was his name, and Lachlan Wallace, and they've just been very smart with shareholders' money. A lot of these junior miners are so guilty of, they just come cap in hand all the time asking for more cash. Realistically, the four-year mine life that they've flagged at the moment, there is more copper. They're only at about 300 metres down. But they basically want to have that cash flow before they start drilling again. and which I think is really fiscally responsible. Yeah. And for mine as well, like copper supply gap is really gathering momentum. Two Chinese smelters, a Korean smelter, have been shut down in the last month. An Ecuadorian project, which was massive, has been put on hold. First Quantum's Panama mine's been shut down by the government, which is like at 1.5% of global supply. Chile and Peru are also civil unrest. That's half of the world's supply. So I look, we're at $10,000 a ton at the moment. I can see this easily going $15,000 US a ton at some stage. We've had a lot of commodity supply gaps cause short squeezing prices, like lithium, nickel, just to name two. So I think copper very definitely is the next one. And these guys, they believe that there's more copper within the mine. So that mine life was the only thing that we were hesitant on. But that further exploration, they've got 100% hit rate on their drilling so far as well. And just to go and do the vein that they've got is very narrow. So the drilling expenses aren't very high, about $7 to $9 million apparently. Mm. And that's a month. That should be a month's profit. And they've also got about $250 million in tax credits as well. So, it's only a small company, 150 odd mil market cap. But if we get copper prices rising and these guys execute, and from what I heard from the CEO yesterday, he, like I said, very pragmatic, very practical, and working in the shareholders' interests, I think this is a massive buy. So, but it is a small project and will probably lack institutional interest. So, yep. It will, but I think it's a very good prospect.
All right. So it ticks a lot of boxes for you. If you're looking in copper, you're calling not just a buy, a massive buy. Daniel, are you as bullish on it?
No, I was probably leaning towards a massive sell at the start. Only for the fact because we know how capital intensive restarts can be. And Hillgrove actually used to operate, this operation in an open pit many years ago. So it's extracted the best quality ore. The ore underground is relatively low grade for an underground project. It's around 1% copper, which you can get by on. But if you look at other juniors in the space that have had to go underground, like even look at the AIC mine, it's got double the grade and its costs are much higher than that $8,000 a ton. So I'm not sure if it's a use of infrastructure already in place or what, the kind of guidance is that the CEO is talking about $8,000 a ton Aussie for operating costs. I probably would have thought it'd be actually close to double that given their lack of scale. But they do have a lot of latent infrastructure there. Give them credit. I think they've got over a 3 million ton mill, which I'm not sure how much they're going to be using. So I just think it's going to need a lot of capital. And they've had ramp up issues as well in the metallurgy. So there are just a few things there where I think there's other opportunities in the space. We spoke about one not too long ago, Andrew Firefly, which is well covered now by Insto since the new team has joined on board, obviously, with the new copper asset there. So when you get, I'm probably looking for something with a bit more scale opportunity and a bit more institutional support to be able to fund it, because the funding gap, in my opinion, is just going to be very difficult to cover. They got a raise off recently, but it didn't look like it was done at a narrow discount. It looked like there was a bit of obviously a difficulty there getting the support. So I'd prefer larger names. I prefer names with more scale. If you're looking for production, I wouldn't be looking at Sandfire. I'm more than happy just to be in a BHP or a Rio for production plays on the ASX. There's other plays listed globally that we can talk about, but yep. I'm not really meddling in too much of the I guess overhyped names now. I think there are a few opportunities in the developers, but Hillgrove, no, it's probably not one of them for me at the moment.
All right, well, Mark wants to write a rebuttal.
No, it was just more so they with the, as I was saying when talking to the CEO yesterday, they basically ran the processing facility, and those costs are like very, very low in getting restarted. So it costs them, I think, $5 million a year or whatever, but they will only be running at about half capacity as well. So the restart costs, as I said, because of fairly practical and pragmatic sort of management, is very, very low. So.
All right. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see, given a diversity of opinion on that stock, how it all pans out. Hopefully we can check in maybe in 12 months' time and see who comes out on top. All right. Well, if you don't, we're a bit worried about commodity prices. Why don't you get into the picks and shovels then? We're going to take a look at, offshore. rather than actually onshore mining. We are doing MMA offshore. This one picked by Leslie. In fact, it's entered into a scheme of implementation deed with Cyan, which is Cyan MMA, which is a subsidiary of Cyan Renewables, proposed an all-cash acquisition of MMA at $2.60 a share, valuing the company at just over $1 billion, subject to shareholder and regulatory approvals. In fact, the MMA board has unanimously recommended that offer. Daniel, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, incredible turnaround for shareholders since obviously the depths of 2020. What's this, probably close to a 15 bagger since the bottom. So yep. Awesome job by management. You know, the whole thesis around MMA Offshore was really the increasing utilization of its assets to service obviously the offshore oil vessels, and you know, that thesis has played out. The takeover, you know, what analysts are saying now is that effectively MMA's assets are worth more in terms of replacement cost than it is and what they're holding on their balance sheet. So there's no wonder why there was a takeover for the company. I think the market is probably assuming, you know, that there's either interloper risk there or someone's going to lob a higher bid, because I believe it's trading above the takeover price. So yep. If I was in the stock right now, I'd just be holding firm, not worrying too much, because even if the deal doesn't go through, you know, the metrics have been holding up in terms of utilization, profitability per vessel, obviously margins as well. And they're winning work in the offshore wind section of their business as well. So I think, you know, a lot of things are going right for it. I wouldn't be, you know, selling now to fund new opportunities. I think there's probably a chance that the deal's revised higher. So happy to sit firmly in this one, Andrew.
Yeah. In fact, they're operating at above 90% utilization for the vessels at the moment. Mark?
Yeah, I agree. Look, normally rule of thumb is at least sell half on a takeover bid just in case it falls through. But this, I think this had massive momentum as it was. And we, strangely enough, we did the analysis prior and then realised that the takeover bid after the fact, as we were going through it, and we were more than happy to buy it at these current prices. So, yeah, bit of a breaking of the normal rules, but I mean, you can't buy it now, but if you've got it, you hold it, given it's that they've recommended that takeover bid. But yeah, it's trading at about a 4 or 5% premium at the moment. So hopefully, there's another bid from to benefit the shareholders.
Yep, wait and see on that one. All right, you've done well if you're in it. We'll continue in mining services essentially now with Monadelphous. This one picked by Hugo. It is an engineering group, provides construction, maintenance, industrial services in the resources and energy and infrastructure sectors, and certainly committed. It's got a growing pipeline of developments that it services in, also in lithium, particularly, and rare earths at the moment. Okay, Mark, Monadelphous.
Yeah, I mean, all of their clients are, real blue chip miners, and they're very, very good at winning business. My only concern over this one would be the margins are pretty thin. Just given that I think, I think we're probably leaning into a potential super cycle of commodities over the next, 2 to 3 years. These guys will do extraordinarily well if commodity prices start to head higher. So I think it's a fairly reasonable price at the moment. But look, I'd say it's fair value, I suppose. It'd be a hold for me. But I'd be more than happy to buy it a little bit cheaper, basically. So it's trading at just a touch premium for me. But like I said, the margins are fairly wafer thin. I think we had someone like Worley's had that issue years ago where they're winning all these contracts constantly, and it just takes one or two to go wrong, and all of a sudden that margin gets eroded pretty quickly. So if I'm going to get into this, I'd like to get into it at, very cheap.
Just a bit of weakness if you buy into that, Daniel.
Yeah, so I like the space. I think, you know, the contracting space and even mining servicing space is very underrated. But I think the large players are overrated for the fact that people just default into them. So I've thought Worley and Monadelphous are probably a sell for the last year or so, just purely based on the fact that, yes, I guess both of them are in really good position. Pipelines are building. If you look at Monadelphous, like, they have an excellent balance sheet position right now as well, with kind of cash flow from last year's result being above expectation. So there's a lot of optionality, but you look to the smaller side of the market, and a lot of these companies have, I guess, more niche businesses, which means that probably do a better job in operating in their niche and extracting better margins. So I think a couple of months ago we spoke about even something like Southern Cross Electrical. That was one I'd prefer to be in rather than the big players. You look at just the, I guess, the base of profitability that they're coming from, you know, obviously coming from lower basis, so the growth is much higher. So I think there's alpha to be generated in this space, but not so much from the larger players. And there's a very lack, if you speak to portfolio managers across Australia, no one wants to touch these stocks because they've been hated for so long. So there's just a cluster of them, even the civil contractors like your Mars Group and your NRWs. Like, I still think they're underrated relative to the large players. So I guess I like the space, I like the thematic, I like where the viewer is thinking from, because the pipelines are good, the order books are growing, but I just prefer other stocks in the space.
All right. Well, let's sum it up then. We've been for the first half of the show, and to be honest, it's been pretty negative, certainly at the beginning. We managed to find a little more positivity as we went on. But our stock of the day, JB Hi-Fi, off the back of its update, and we're getting some more from retailers, which has largely been negative, and that's been reflected on the market today with some heavy selling going on in that consumer discretionary space. So JB Hi-Fi, stock of the day, it is a double sell from both our experts, just seeing particularly the obviously the pressure that the household is under at the moment, and discretionary, Mark points out, has run hard. So yeah, and looking pretty negative for the broader sector there. Domino's, so obviously related just in terms of the consumer, also a double sell, which perhaps shouldn't be a surprise given how they're feeling about their sector. Into Resources, Fortescue, it is also a double sell, both pointing out, look, that's that lack of diversity there. It is all dependent on that the iron ore price, but Mark looking for some positivity, say so sell it and buy BHP if you're looking for that diversity in that space. Hillgrove Resources, it is a buy from Mark. In fact, he owns it. It is that pure copper play, which seems to be pretty hard to find locally, at least. Daniel, though, a bit worried about low grades there for what it has, and his preference would be Firefly. So he's actually got a sell on Hillgrove. MMA Offshore, it is a hold from both, and for Monadelphous there, a hold from Mark, buy on weakness, and a sell from Daniel. All right, let's catch up with our portfolio that we're tracking here with set by our investment committee. The latest episode of that is live here to watch at AusBiz.com. Checking in on the update, going into May, the committee sold Domino's, Santos, and Evolution Mining, and added Southern Cross Electrical, which Daniel just mentioned that he likes, Sonic Healthcare, and Aristocrat Leisure. ResMed was trimmed by 1%, and Premier Investments by 1.5%, and cash was raised to 5% from 2%. In terms of its performance, the fund is up more than 31.5% on a cumulative return basis since its inception in March 2022. So keep your requests coming in, keep the call switched on to see which stocks our committee will be looking at next. Second half of the show, we're going to take a look at Eagers Automotive, Cube Holdings, The Reject Shop, Restaurant Brands Group, and BSA. So let's dive into Eagers Auto Group, picked by Peter. Has in fact seen growth for new vehicle sales in February, rebounded 21% year on year. So that's certainly a positive. New car deliveries continue to set new records there. And also has a tilt into EVs at the same time. So Mark, gives your thoughts on Eagers.
I like this stock overall. Nick Politis, obviously pretty good operator. Their BYD exclusive contract they've got as well, I'm assuming, is probably what's driving the new vehicle sales. It's got a pretty high yield. It's sort of what we call a sneaky REIT as well. It's got a lot of property in the portfolio with the car yards and things as well. And they're sort of vertically integrated into finance, insurance. The tax breaks for the EVs obviously be helping massively as well. It's got a fairly high yield and a pretty consistent ROE as well. And Nick Politis is like a one-man buyback machine. So every time that stock dips down to into single-digit PEs, he just tends to just be there on the bid. So I don't mind this. I, given the consumer outlook, and this is a really large, high, you know, big-ticket item for consumers, and we've got diminishing disposable incomes. I'd say it's a hold, but overall, if you know, I'd be happy to buy on weakness. But that's mainly my sector outlook rather than the company outlook. I think it's a very high quality business.
So you're concerned the short term, longer term though. Are you seeing the strength there?
Yeah, I'd be trying to, you know, if we have an economic slowdown or a recession, we've got to cut rates and we start to see equity markets aggressively turn lower, and you can pick this up pretty cheap. I think it's a good long-term hold overall. So
yeah,
but just at the moment, I think, you know, we're just seeing the start of the selling in that consumer discretionary today, in my opinion, and I don't think you want to be buying into, you know, probably one of the bigger ticket items most consumers will buy. You know, you probably just make do with the car you've got for a while.
Daniel.
Yeah, when we first got the list, I hadn't really had too much of a look at this stock in the past, so I was probably thinking right off the bat, for the same reasons that Mark called out, it's probably going to be a sell. But and this is one of those stocks that it doesn't screen well. So if you look at the metrics typically investors screen for, perhaps other than ROE, which I guess is inflated because of the use of leverage, obviously everything, it doesn't, it's never been a company that pops up in those types of filters. But I was actually pleasantly surprised looking through the results and just more about, I guess, the qualitative way that this business has been run. Like, obviously, the improvement in technology and the way that they're able to sell vehicles has led them to reduce headcount by over a third since pre-COVID. So that's been one major reason why they've been able to maintain margins, even now that the order books are slowing and obviously new car sales are slowing as well. So the reduce of I guess, overhead costs and productivity has therefore gone up a lot. And obviously, because we had those few years where supply chains were so interrupted and vehicles weren't being delivered, there was wait lists of up to 12 months plus, you know, their order book is still six times above what it was pre-COVID as well. So I actually think there's reason to be, you know, relatively positive on this company, and underrating the order book has been a mistake of mine in the past 12 months. Like, I was really concerned about a company like CSR, and you know, they've held up extremely well and their order book has been a massive reason for it. The home builders in the US as well have had shorter order books, but they've been a lot more solid than perhaps what I would have expected. So I'm happy to actually give this a hold, but I'm not too far away from a buy here, Andrew. I think around the $10 mark, the valuation is a lot more appealing. But yeah, credit to obviously Nick Politis. He's, you know, been in the business for a long time, you know, obviously ran it very well. Dividends per share, earnings per share are up three times in the last 10 years. Like, this is I think a decent quality business, lots of optionality because of the amount of property. All the property is carried at book value or costs, which undervalues them, you know, obviously by nature. So yeah, I'm happy to be in this one. It might take a bit longer to outperform because of those upcoming, you know, consumer factors, but I'm still comfortable with a hold for this one.
So, I mean, it's certainly well off its highs. So at what point would you buy?
I think it's probably about 15 to 20% away from an appealing valuation in my eyes, Andrew. The expectations, which is what I always look at, are not very high for this stock at all in terms of growth going forward. But, you know, there's inorganic opportunities. There's still an order book. So I think it can reasonably meet those expectations. And it wouldn't take that much for me to be a buyer in this stock.
All right. That's Eagers Automotive. Let's move on now to Cube Holdings, picked by Ash. It is a diversified logistics transport infrastructure company. Certainly has a presence on Australian docks with its Patrick's stevedores. It's increased its guidance for underlying profit to 10 to 15%, up from 5 to 10 previously. And does it's also experienced better than expected container activity, particularly across its Cuban and Patrick's presence in its ports. Daniel?
I was actually expecting this to probably be faring worse off than what it has been, just looking at other players within the logistics industry. Obviously, that's more transportation heavy. We spoke about Lindsay recently. Even things like Aurizon had what I would say a pretty poor report in its bulk business, saved by, you know, an earnings uplift in its coal business. But Qube has, you know, recently actually upgraded earnings guidance to a decent amount, like 10 to 15% earnings per share growth for, you know, a company which you wouldn't expect that in a normal year, I would say. It's a relatively mature, boring business. And, you know, I think that's why the shares have obviously been well supported. But my issue here is, you know, if you're in the equity market and you're looking for growth, you're looking to outperform the market, I don't think Qube's one way to play it. So it's all situational in my view here. If you're looking for something which is going to carry lower volatility, you know, deliver, you know, an okay income stream, nothing, you know, really significant, I think it's around 3%, maybe 4%, you know, dividend yield and just that stability in your portfolio, you know, I could understand why you'd be holding on to this one. But overall, I think if you're looking for growth and you're looking to outperform the market, Qube probably isn't the way, you know, I'd be looking to play it. In fact, I actually enjoy following Qube because they give so much data in the industry overall. Like they give you really good look through for other businesses. But you know, it's probably not one I'd be looking to add to my equity portfolio, to be honest. So look, it's a sell, but a sell for a specific reason. If you're in it for that low volatility and you want to hold it for that, I think that's more than acceptable. That's probably one of the better ways to play it. And there are not many infrastructure stocks left on the ASX, but if you're looking for growth and to outperform the market, I'd be looking to trim and sell.
Yep. All right. That's certainly reasonable justification, Mark.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, really. It's horses for courses. If you want that stability, they've beaten earnings expectations the last sort of four results. Margins are improving from a technical charting standpoint. It's in a really strong uptrend. It's a stable business. But yeah, I mean, it's not a growth stock, so I probably wouldn't necessarily buy it here, but you'd probably try and buy dips overall, but because it has had a recent, you probably missed your opportunity a few weeks ago, or maybe back in late March, etc., leading into, there was obviously an update recently, but it was a really solid update, and they have a habit of doing that, so I think we're probably only around about 5 to 10% away from maybe fair value, so I think, you know, it really is probably up. It's a high risk buy here because it's not, as Daniel outlined, it's not a growth stock. This is the sort of one that if you want it in your portfolio for stability, dividends and things like that, you probably want to try and buy this stock on a dip on weakness rather than, you know, I don't think you can afford to pay away because it's not going to run away to the upside. Yep. So different story if it's, you know, something that's high growth like Prometicus or WiseTech or Lovisa and things like that, absolutely different story. But, you know, the business of this ilk is probably you want to be much more like buying dips rather than buying with momentum.
All right. Well, let's now get back into the consumer discretionary space with The Reject Shop. And interesting to see its last results, in fact, would have been travelling all right if not for what is a problem which actually reflects what's going on more broadly with the Australian economy at the moment. It suffered from shoplifting, otherwise known as shrinkage in the business, which did have a material impact on it. In fact, saying earnings fell by around $4 million, would have been flat without that problem that has emerged. And in fact, management saying they only became aware of that at stock take time. Goodness. Mark, what do you think?
I feel like we're getting an annual report from the local corner store. but yeah, look, the analysts seem to love this. I can't see it at all. Like we've got so many great high quality retail stocks in Australia. Yeah, I think I've had this in the call in the past, and I just can't see real, it's, you know, it's kind of competing with, I mean, they buy a lot of surplus stock and things like that. I mean, they're kind of competing with Audi, but at least you've got a reason to walk into Audi because there's other things that get you through the door. I'm
guessing you've never actually bought anything with The Reject Shop.
No, I'm probably have at some stage. The kids love going in there. Right. But look, yeah, it's No, I can't get excited about this at all. Sorry. Yeah, and I don't really. It's been a perennial underperformer. If we're talking about shoplifting in the annual report, then it's going to be pretty hard to get excited about.
Yeah, interesting excuse, Daniel.
I was going to call that point out, but you beat me to it, Andrew. I thought that was a fascinating point when I was reading through its recent presentations and report. And it goes to show when you're such a this is such a low margin business, when you have complications in your operations, like it can wipe out your profits. This is a 1% net margin, you know, operation. And you know, I think like Mark pointed out, the reason why analysts love this stock is because it's so optically cheap. Like, and it doesn't take much for the profits to go flying. So if they have, you know, a better than expected sales result, which I think the thesis is, down trading, you want obviously consumer pressures, cost of living pressures, you want cheaper goods, could result in a higher demand for the reject shop. But you know, I just think it's a tough line to draw because, you know, people don't have that brand recognition. And now, in fact, for, you know, random goods, I think the prevalence of something like a Facebook marketplace or online shopping is actually kind of trumped what in the past something like a reject shop or a cash converters could have filled. So I think there's a lot of things going against the company here. And it just looks like a very tough operation from that point of view. And you know, they have a lot of cash on the balance sheet, 80 million supporting a buyback and supported dividends in the past, but I just think, you know, that's going to get worn down over time. I can't see, you know, if you look at its recent results, there's actually not cash building on the balance sheet. You know, don't look at the operating cash flow, you include the leases in your calculation, it pretty much wipes it out after capex. So yeah, I just think, you know, the commonality in this show so far, Andrew, has been stocks that perhaps are optically cheap or have done well during COVID and now they've sold down, you know, are these value opportunities? I think I'm leaning towards value traps for a lot of them. So more than happy to be out of this stock, similar to what Mark said. Every time it's come up, I haven't liked it. So it's a sell for me too.
Yeah, it's looked optically cheap every time. I think I've had it on the call probably half a dozen times, I reckon. And every time I look at it and go, oh, what? No. And it continues to grind down. So,
well, maybe reflects its merchandise and looks cheap, but when you actually get it home, you think,
definitely.
All right, look, we're going to really continue with the consumer then for our next stock as well. It is Restaurant Brands Group, or Restaurant Brands New Zealand, because that's where it's based. Does operate KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Carl's Juniors in New Zealand, KFC and Taco Bell in Australia, also in, I think, California and Hawaii as well. So a bit of diversity regionally, at least there. So we are talking fast food, of course. Daniel?
This is another one where the optics have been really tough, Andrew. And I think in the past, they've obviously had a history with too much debt on the balance sheet and discounted capital raisings. And they still have, looking at my numbers here, $280 million of debt, which is concerning because I think the market cap itself is only around, you know, $300-400 million, and not much in cash, $30 million in cash. So very large revenue base here, over $1 billion in revenue New Zealand, obviously through those franchisees. But you know, this is again a business where the margins are low, things can swing heavily. But I just think that it's just an inferior quality business. KFC in New Zealand has always been its kind of its hallmark, what it's known for, similar to kind of what Collins Food in Australia has been. But the New Zealand economy and consumers obviously under more stress than what we have in Australia because, you know, the interest rate parity and et cetera. So, look, it's just another stock where I just think optically, yes, it's cheap. There could be significant earnings swings, but I just can't really justify, I guess, holding it because, you know, the volatility in earnings swings both ways, Andrew, and the cash flows as well haven't been too great. So, look, I would be placing this above some of the other stocks we've spoken about today, but still, like, I just don't see a rationale to be really optimistic about this business and consider holding it for a turnaround, particularly because of that debt. So it's another one where I just prefer not to be in it.
Okay, so take it as a sell. Interesting then, Daniel. So you mentioned that obviously it's New Zealand business where it's focused, affected by, you know, the economy struggling more than it is here. Yet, when we began the show, we're talking about JB Hi-Fi, which its Kiwi business was actually doing better than its Australian. So how do you rationalise that?
That was a head scratcher. I was actually very shocked, but I think it's probably comparison off a different base, Andrew, because if you look probably a year or two ago, the New Zealand same store sales, which we're using as a comparison, was a lot lower than Australia. So I think it's more so a base effect. But even if you look at, you know, a large retailer, like I think it is a Briscoe Group in New Zealand, they had good numbers as well. So it seems to be, you know, I guess impacts of things like market share, brand power, you know, obviously how well the business is being run, and those are factors which are, I guess, are hard to analyze just purely looking at the numbers. You have to have an experience with the business, but for the JB Hi-Fi in particular, I think that was a base impact.
All right, and just quickly, so what do you make of its peer then in Collins Foods?
Yeah, well, Collins Foods is under pressure as well. Like, its margins were recovering after that big inflationary bump, but still now we're starting to see that unwind and pressures come through. So, I mean, the Australian KFC business is dominant. Like, that business is awesome. It's always the Taco Bell or the Sizzler or whatever else it's doing that destroys shareholder value. So I would be waiting on the sideline. And looking to get in this one probably at about 20% cheaper than it is today.
Yeah.
I think that was a reasonable price to pay, but I'll be much more favoured towards Collins Foods than I would restaurant brands.
All right, Mark.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'd be selling both of them, but Collins Food Group would be the preferred. And we've had a bit of trouble in the past with these the New Zealand companies listed on the ASX. Ebo was a great example. It optically looked fantastic. Reports beats earnings expectations and goes nowhere. Like this one, so there seems to be a bit of a discount almost worked into a lot of these sort of, you know, New Zealand exchange stocks that are listed on the ASX. They just don't seem to get the attention that. That the Australian ones do. So, but yeah, I look, any business where you, particularly with the KFC, where you're having to replace lettuce with cabbage at certain stages because of margin pressure, means that it's not for us at all. And yeah, it's just definitely not for us, basically. But if you were going to go into this, I think we would much prefer Collins Food Group.
Yeah. But then you'd be selling that anyway.
But I wouldn't buy either, right. To be honest. Sorry.
All right. Okay. Well, let's see how we go with our last stock then. It is BSA, picked by Rick. Now, it's one of these stocks I've never come across, certainly on the call before. Formerly Comet Satellite and Cable, which does provide technical services contracting. All right, Mark, what can you tell us about it?
Two words, lobster pot. it trades about $3,000 to $4,000 worth of shares a day.
That's probably why we've never done it before.
I dare say, again, we go back to optically, it looks cheap. But it looks pretty cheap to us. But I mean, we much prefer IPD Group, IPG, sort of similar space, listed a couple of years ago. We hold that instead. It had 121 mil revenue, 10 mil EBITDA. It's only, I think it's a 50 mil market cap. So, they do a lot of high voltage lines. I didn't go too deep into it overall, but it depends on whether those high voltage lines are fixed, fixed cost jobs, because obviously our concerns over copper, it's a massive, that could be a massive cost blowout as well. So input costs could be rising for both of those companies. Realistically, but you know, they do a fair bit of work in expanding out the residential EVs, but for us, IPG or IPD Group is much preferred in the space. They're rolling out EV charging stations around Australia, obviously doing data center stuff and things, but data center rollouts as well in industrial estates. So and it's a company with a very long track record as a private business, but as a public business, it's only been around a few years. So I think it'll continue to grow quite nicely. It's around the 400 mil market cap range. But it does look very cheap, but it doesn't trade a lot. So I wouldn't be rushing out to buy it. But they seem to be making a bit of money. So
all right, that's a no then from you, Daniel.
Yeah, when I looked and saw the average daily trade, I probably came to the same conclusion. It's not really worth our time and going to look further, because you can't really be invested in a stock like this. And, you know, I even looked at the recent trading update, the quarterly cash flows. I mean, I think it's got $500,000 in cash, has access to finance. And obviously, as that distribution-based business, you probably don't need too much cash on hand. It's mostly working capital, but still, not leaving too much room for error there. But interesting interestingly enough, I saw when I was looking at the board, David Prescott from Lanyon Asset Management. I'm obviously familiar with him being in equities, but I'm not sure what his tie into the business in. If Lanyon was invested in the company or et cetera, that might be something to investigate. But like Mark said, there's other companies in this space. We already spoke about Southern Cross Electrical. IPD Group is another one we've owned as well. And even interesting, you know, I guess more on the data center side, which got to give your hats off to Luke Winchester and SKS Technologies. That's been an absolute belter. So there's other opportunities in the space if you're interested. I probably can't find a good reason to be in this one.
All right, that is fair enough. Then let's round out the second half of the show and APE, Eagers Automotive. It's a hold from both. Mark pointing out, look, it's also what he calls a sneaky REIT because it holds a lot of property. But a bit wary of the consumer, given obviously buying a car is, second to a house, the biggest purchase you're likely to make. Daniel, though, yeah, he's got a hold on, but he would buy on weakness. Cube Holdings, it is a sell from both, but at the same time, they say you could hold it if you want that stability which you'd get from the stock. The Reject Shop, well, it's been rejected by both, in fact. It's a big no, very low margins, underperforming, yeah, negative all over. Restaurant Brands, yeah, also pretty negative on that. It is based in New Zealand, essentially, within fast food, particularly KFC. It is a sell from both, Daniel pointing out, carrying too much debt at this moment. And BSA, what Mark calls a lobster pot, barely trades. Both mention IPD Group if you want to be in that space, so it is a no from both. All right, welcome, you are welcome to be on the show, and it's been great to have you on the show, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Apologies for the negativity.
That's why it is what it is. We want a realistic view of those stocks that we're getting at the moment. And Daniel, always great to catch up with you. Thanks for joining us from Stock Doctor.
Cheers, Andrew, and cheers, Mark.
Cheers.
Good one. All right. That is our show. Any stocks you'd like us to cover, you can go to ausbiz.co/callpicks, or you can write to us on X at AusbizTV. Thanks for watching.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.